Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 197, being recorded on the 27th of September, 2017, with special guest Matthew Hofacker. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Evan and our special guest Matthew. Kale's looks like he's busy tonight. He wasn't able to join us. I believe he said he was in Moscow, right, Evan?
I can't even keep up with where he is on any given week anymore. He's off. There's some blockchain emergency somewhere.
I'm sure. And I remember seeing a note from him earlier today saying that he was in Moscow, and he said it would be 4 o'clock in the morning or something like that, or some weird time.
We'll cut him a break.
We'll let him enjoy his, hopefully he had some vodka or something like that and is enjoying himself out there. But this is also an important week for Microsoft because we had the Ignite conference that's going on as we speak. I think it's, is it over or is it tomorrow the last? I think it's it, tomorrow
I think
is
it's
the
tomorrow
last day.
As well. Yeah, I think so.
Thursday is the last day, right? The 28th. So, there's been a ton of announcements at Ignite, which we'll cover in a subsequent episode. Just focus on that because it's just too many announcements. You know, it would easily take up an entire show. So for today, we're going to focus on some of the you know, the other announcements that came up before Ignite in the Azure space, and then we'll have a chat with Matthew about Azure automation. So let's start with the updates. And Evan, is there anyone that you want to pick from that list that you put out?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the ones that I thought was really cool, because this really takes advantage of, this isn't a new functionality in the world, but I think we're delivering it in a new way, is the SQL Vulnerability Scanner, right? So this allows, we go in and we take a look at your Azure SQL DB and tell you, you know, hey, you've got your permission set wrong, or you've got security vulnerability, you know, or you've got, you know, I don't know, you've got sensitive data that's exposed in some fashion, right? All the kind of the common things. But in the on-premises world, right, the problem is always, how do you keep that up to date? You got to reinstall it. You got to, you know, manage it locally. You know, how do you get the latest and greatest rules? Now this is a service that you can just point to your Azure SQL DB. And, you know, when you go look at your instance, you'll see it. Here's all the things you do to mitigate it. You know, we'll provide some ways to solve it. And, you know, when we come up with a new rule or we find something new, it'll immediately show up in the service and everybody will have it. So it's a really nice way to deliver it.
So how does this fit in with Azure Security Center? I always thought that was the vehicle for these kind of things, no?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a tie-in, right? So that the Azure Security Center can kind of flag the same things. But I think part of this, and again, this is something we'll have to go track down a PM to come and talk about this, but if it wouldn't surprise me if this shows up kind of integrated in the portal as well for Azure SQL DB, right? So that even somebody that's not using ASC would see this stuff as well. But yeah, but we'll track somebody down and get them to come on and you know, talk in depth about this.
That's good. Well, another update that caught my eye is the global VNet peering is now entering public preview. And as our listeners may know, VNet peering has been something really popular if you've had VNets in maybe in two different paired data centers within the same region. You could pair them up so that they appear to be one, but you couldn't do it across regions. And now you can do that, so you can create that global VNet peer. And it's right now it's only supporting a couple of regions, as the U.S. West Central, Canada Central, and U.S. West 2. But obviously that's going to open up as the preview proceeds. So that's something that I'm sure our customers will find interesting, because it just makes, you know, having an HA story so much easier, right? You can just have your VNets across regions just peer to each other, talk to each other.
Well, yeah, now you don't have to like the IPsec tunnels in between and all that
Right.
kind of rigmarole that you had to make it work previously.
And it all goes through the Azure backbone anyway, so it's all secure, it's all fast, you know, it's not like it's
Yep.
going out through the internet or something like that.
Yep.
Great. What else do you like on
So,
that list?
this again falls in the category of again something we'll have to have somebody come on and talk about, but a whole bunch of changes for the Azure Load Balancer. We've got some advanced analytics. We've got you can load balance against across availability sets or I'm sorry, availability zones, right?
That's the
The new
new,
stuff that yeah, that's the new thing we've got. You can have a little bit more NSG control. There's some we've reworked the way that we snap our connections, right? Just lots and lots of changes, adding capabilities to the load balancer. So again, we'll get somebody come on talk in detail about this. But if you're using load balancers today, you are going to want to go check it out. And we call it the Azure Load Balancer Standard. If I had to guess, that means at some point there'll be a premium coming down the path. But that it's got some features above and beyond the standard, the normal load balancer that's out there before. So check it out if you use those.
Great. And then this last item that I saw is called the Azure Data Box. It's a cool name, by the way.
It is, yeah.
I thought this was interesting because I just this morning I was reading about something similar that Amazon offers for AWS. And essentially, it's an appliance, or there's a nice picture on it of it on the website. We'll put that in the show notes. It's not clear how big it is. I think the size is not very good. It's obviously not something that you can ship, through FedEx or something. And I think it has to be like a truck or something. We'll deliver to your data center. But essentially, you could store up to 100 terabytes of data on it. And the idea is that if you need to upload a whole lot of data in the order of terabytes or petabytes to Azure, it would take too long. It would take weeks to do it using the traditional way. And so this is a device where they'll ship you this big NAS device. You plug it into your network, you do the transfer at high speed, and then you ship it back to Azure, and Azure uploads it into your storage account, your Azure Data Lake or whatever it may be, right? And then you can do all the processing directly in Azure.
I wish I'd had this when I uploaded all of my family's pictures and everything. I mean, all we had, I mean, we didn't have terabytes and terabytes, but we had, 600 or 800 gigabytes worth of stuff to send up. It was, it took some time. So this would have been great to just, rent it, put it on, ship it back. That'd be cool.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know if my family would like this showing up at the house, but I think it would be cool.
Okay, so that's it, right, for the updates for this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, we will have tons over the next couple of weeks, so
We will,
let's,
yeah.
why don't we get to Matt tonight?
Okay, great. Well, Matt, thank you for coming on the podcast, and appreciate if you could just let our listeners know, what your background is at Microsoft, and introduce yourself, and we'll take it from there.
My background.
It's long and varied, right, Matt?
Yeah, it's long and varied. I like to say that they changed my diapers here. But yeah, I basically grew up here and I've done, I mean, lots of stuff, mostly in the developer support space, starting with Fox Pro and moving on to VB and data access technologies and reporting services and
Oh,
data
nice.
access
A
APIs
developer,
and
man. That's the kind of person I like to talk to all the time. Great.
And then somewhere a few years back, I moved into System Center and then discovered this thing called Azure Automation when it was starting to roll out and got involved and been enjoying that ever since.
Yeah, slightly funny story about Matt. So Matt was my first TL when I got here at Microsoft. I remember him and some of the other guys on the team looking at me kind of weird when I got into this Azure thing, because I was fairly early on in the space. And now a couple of years later, actually more than a couple, it's neat to see all these folks, who these really talented engineers, right, showing up in the space, and learning things. There's more services you can throw a stick at, right? And so
Oh yeah,
there's
that's
a
great.
lot of people in it. But yeah, it's great to see you in this space, and it's great to work with you again.
I know. Now I'm running to Evan all the time for help.
It'll turn back around at some point, I'm sure. Don't worry.
Well, I don't know. You got a big head start on me.
So let's talk about this Azure automation. And you know, we've mentioned it in the show before, but why don't we just give our listeners a little bit of background and refresh as to what it is and what it and what it's used for, and then we'll talk about some other stuff.
Sure. It's, I mean, in a nutshell, it's pretty simplistic, really. It's a service that hosts PowerShell, so you can write your own scripts to do whatever it is you want to do. The biggest example and the most heavily used scenario that we see is people writing runbooks to start and stop VMs around all sorts of things. They might even write stuff to scale things up and down, depending on, you know, load scenarios. So, you know, that's the biggest number one thing. I would say probably 70% of the cases I see have to deal with people trying to get their runbooks to work to do that one thing in some various fashion. And you'd be surprised the number of different ways people go about doing that for a variety of good reasons, obviously, but there's not many that are the same, you know, that you see again and again.
Right. Now, tell me, just clarify one thing for me, because it's been a while since I did this. So I know, obviously, as a developer, I know PowerShell scripts. How does that relate to runbooks, though? What's the relationship there?
Runbook is just where you is the vehicle to house your script.
I see.
So basically, you write the power. If you'd write it, PowerShell code on your machine, you'd go up into Azure Automation in the portal and you would create a new runbook, and you can choose your type, which is either workflow or standard PowerShell script, paste your code in that thing, and then you run the instance of the runbook. Then it would, that's what goes off and gets scheduled as a job and is executed. And it's just basically a means to manage your different scripts.
I see. So each runbook is one or more scripts, or just one script? What's the mapping?
Just pretty much just one script. It's usually just one script, and you can have, you know, your one script can call another, start off another runbook.
I see.
You know, spin off a bunch of them, and a lot of people do that very commonly.
So one of the things you said there, Matt, that I want to make sure we go back and hit on, because I think this is a key thing, is you literally said cut and paste my PowerShell, right? So I don't have to learn a new language. I don't have to learn like new syntax. I mean, there may be a couple little quirks here or there, but I mean, I can functionally cut and paste PowerShell that I wrote and run on premises and say, hey, I want to run this, you know, I want to automate this. I want this to run kind of on a schedule or whatever, and just take that on premises PowerShell and plop it in the runbook and go.
For the most part, I mean, there are some caveats there, right? Depending on the modules you might need, things of that nature. But yeah, it's a lot of times it's plug and play. I mean, you know, obviously, if you like the start stop VM thing, obviously you're going to be authenticating to Azure and then starting the machines. But so a lot of times people will be using those runbooks. Well, can you run it outside? Do you see the problem outside of Azure? And so that would be one of the steps we do in support, is let's extract it from the service and see if we see the problem.
Oh, so run it standalone first.
Yeah, a lot of times we'll do that just as a troubleshooting technique, right, to see is it something that we're only seeing in the service, or are we seeing outside the service?
Hmm.
Now, I mean, there's some caveats that, you know, module versions could be different that you have loaded in the account versus what you're picking up locally. PowerShell version could be different in both places, obviously. So those things we got to line up, but yeah.
But those are problems anywhere. If I go run, I can't, I mean, theoretically I can hand somebody PowerShell, and if they run it on the same version and build the Windows, they're running the same stuff. But conceptually there are challenges on-prem with that as well. So that's, like, this is just the reality of trying to run scripts in multiple places. Like, this isn't a functional problem to Azure Automation per se.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but with Azure Automation, the version of PowerShell, you don't control it, right? It's kind of, it's there for
Correct.
You. Right.
Right.
If you're running it on premises, you probably already have some pre-installed version of PowerShell, and you know it's got version 4.x or whatever. But here you have to make assumptions. So I don't know. Is it selectable? Can you choose a different PowerShell version,
No, you can't. You can run. You know, you can in your runbook. You can actually just type in your code, do a write output $ PS version table, and see the version that's up there at any given time.
Hmm.
So I think it's like 5.1 right now is what we have up there, which is, so it's pretty current.
Okay. Now you also said workflow. How does that differ from the script?
Well, there's PowerShell script and there's PowerShell workflow. And PowerShell workflow, in a nutshell, that basically allows you to have jobs that you can recover from if they fail. So basically, you would run this code, and there's caveats to how you can do this, how you can implement it. But you can say checkpoint here, and so what happens is if you have some long running job that's got to do a whole lot of work, you can say checkpoint at certain intervals. And so what will happen is if the job gets restarted or something goes sour and it suspends because it hits a failure, you can resume it and it will pick up at the last checkpoint that you have and should obviously just keep running through. And that's the biggest thing behind that feature.
Very cool.
That's the whole point of that guy.
Okay. So, go ahead, Evan.
I was gonna say, so it sounds like, let's going back to you said this really common scenario. So it sounds like, I mean, there's a couple of, for certain services, there's the ability to scale up or scale down. VMs, though, in general, right? There really isn't that. So it sounds like what you're seeing a lot of people use out of automation is to figure out what is their, I guess, business rule for when to scale up, when to scale down, when to scale out, when to, whatever it is that they're doing from a resource perspective, and then allows them to totally customize that logic based on their business scenario, right? I want to do it over the weekend, I want to reduce my VMs, or I want to turn them off, or I want to do it based on, stock price, right? It doesn't really matter, right? They can do whatever, they have total flexibility to do whatever logic they want to drive that scale up, scale down type mentality.
Correct.
Which,
Now,
oh,
sorry.
go ahead, Sajid.
Now I was going to ask, how does that, you bring up a good point. How does that link up with Azure Scheduler, right? Is that the vehicle? How do you schedule these things? Or does this service have its own scheduler?
It has its own scheduler service in it,
I see.
but you can also set up webhooks that you can use, basically either URLs that you can set and call from anywhere, that you can issue a URL command and basically it'll kick off your runbook based on
Nice.
you do the post to that URL. So you could use some other service to kick off the thing,
Oh, so you could kind
just
of
by
do it on
calling a
demand almost.
URL. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
Very nice.
Yep. And then I think Evan and I were talking earlier. One thing I don't want to, it's been in the back of my mind because he brought it up, was the whole hybrid worker scenario.
What's that all
Which
about?
is basically, it is an on-premises machine that you can, so basically you can run jobs in the cloud or you can have them run on a local machine where you want to have the script do stuff against on-premises resources,
Okay.
whatever that might be. I can't think of a good one off the top, but
Well, let's use the one that one of our colleagues was doing. Is he was wanting to, I guess, think it was send an email. So he was looking up somebody's manager, and so he had to make an Active Directory call.
I was thinking the same thing. AD is
There
probably
you go.
the ideal choice thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So in that case, you don't have to be on premises. If you're using Azure AD, theoretically you use Graph, but not everybody uses it. So that would be, but I mean, do I have to install an agent on premises? Like, how do I kick this off on prem?
There's an agent you gotta install. There's steps in the books online that walks you through setting it up, and it registers that machine with the automation services. And so when you kick off the job or you set up a schedule to run the run this run book, you can pick, do you want to run it on Azure, in the cloud, or do you want to run this, on your hybrid worker? And you just pick which one you want it to do.
I
And it'll
see.
just push the job off and run it wherever it's supposed to run it.
I see. So it'll download the script to that agent and run it and then get the status back and report it and things like that.
A lot of times, I guess another good scenario that people use it for is, obviously running a job, a run book in Azure. There's obviously multi-tenant things we have to be conscientious of. We terminate jobs after, 3 hours. We don't let them run for more than 3 hours at a time. We only let them use so much memory, So if people have jobs where they're going to be consuming, they know they're going to be consuming a lot of memory, or they're going to be running for many, many hours, and they don't want to do, workflows or something of that nature. They can create this hybrid worker to basically send the job to, and they avoid those constraints.
I see. And then in that case, the obviously the time and the memory constraints are not there.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, that's cool.
So when I'm looking at Azure automation, and I'm not worried so much for the sake of this conversation about the exact dollars, but like how does that like VMs charge based on minutes of compute? Actually, I think we're even making some changes around that. But like the and then SQL Azure charges based on the size of your database and the number of DTUs that you've got. How does Azure automation charge? Is it like, I pay
It's
for per minutes of
yep,
runtime,
it's
like.
per minutes of execution time. So job starts running, takes 3 minutes to run, you're charged for those 3 minutes. Now, that being said, the pricing tier just recently changed in that everybody gets in this set of pricing tier where the first 500 minutes that you get is always free
Right.
every month. And then every minute after that, it's like 0.00, I think it's three zeros and a two. I mean,
Essentially free.
it's pretty minimal. Yeah, it's pretty minimal. I mean, don't quote me on that, but
Yeah.
if you go to the blade and go to the pricing, it'll show you what it is per minute. But yeah, it's per minute.
Because it's interesting, because this, I mean, Sujeet, we just had, and her name just went out of my head. I had it a minute ago, but
Sasha?
Sasha was on last week to talk about serverless computing. This feels like another service that really allows you to do that, right? You have this PowerShell, you deploy it somewhere, and when you need it, you call the webhook or you schedule the job, you pay for the, X amount of minutes that it runs, and then when you don't need it, it's not running and you're not paying for it.
Yeah,
Yep. Yep.
good point. It sounds like another form of serverless computing. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
If there's one thing that you would to tell people about Azure automation, like either, this is something that, and it sounds like it's really good for, your resource scaling, but like you should use it for this and you don't see enough people doing it, or vice versa, like just don't do this, people, ever, it just doesn't work great or whatever. Or does it, is the service work that, I mean, is it really that simple and solid that it really is?
It's I mean, for the most part, yeah, it is really pretty simple and solid. I guess the biggest thing that from a support standpoint that is tough for us to deal with is that people are saying, okay, I'm gonna put this in, Azure Automation, and so they go up in that create runbook and they're writing the code against whatever it might be, and then they having problems with it, and then they contact Azure Automation support, and they're doing script code against some service or some technology that with commands I've never even seen before, right? And so they're asking me for
Right.
help on doing all this stuff, and I'm like, I would love to be able to help you, but I really don't have. And some things I'm pretty good at, like starting up VMs, because we see so much of it, so we've
Right.
got some strength there. I see a lot of people. When I see people doing stuff with Azure SQL, I usually jump in because I got some background there. But like I saw somebody do something with Data Lake, and it was taking what I don't know what they were doing was like something that was taking days and days to complete. And I'm like, something doesn't sound right, but I don't know if what you're doing is intended to be done this way. Is there some better way to do it? There's all those
Yeah.
caveats of when you deal with a particular technology on how you should do things and how you manage these things, and that's where it comes in from when they call. I'm like, man, I would love to help you, but I don't even know what to really.
So maybe the recommendation then is like, and I think you said it early on, pull it out of Azure Automation. Do you see the same problem there? If you do, okay, it's not an Azure Automation problem per se.
Right.
Right. And so at that point, go, research that technology or, engage that support team if you really need help. Right. Because then they're going to be more likely to talk to somebody that knows that area.
Yep, knows the commandlet, knows how it behaves, how you should use them, all that good stuff. Exactly.
If I were a developer and having this kind of problem, right, how would I set up my environment to mimic Azure Automation, right? You're asking me to run the script in my own in my own box, so to speak. I want to make sure it's got the same environment that Azure Automation does, right? Obviously, otherwise it's not an apples to apples comparison otherwise. So, what would they have to do? You just say that, okay, they need PowerShell version 5.01 or whatever you said, right? They should start with that version. What else should they have in that environment to so that when they run the script, they're running it exactly like it would run in Azure Automation, so that they can get a good feel for it.
Well, I mean the modules that they use, Azure RM modules, the Azure RM SQL modules, they'd want to make sure that they're using the same ones that they have,
So the
they
versions of all those modules have
version of
to
the same.
compare.
And as long as you got all that stuff in play, that's usually the most I'm con that we're concerned about support is those things lining up, yes or no. And then the other thing would be is okay, the next thing that's comes into play is like, people say, well, I ran and it worked.
Right.
And okay, well, you ran it 550 times, and on the 551st time it failed. Well, who knows? That failure might have occurred if you'd done it on premise that many times too.
Right.
And so you got to figure out, well, what actually failed? Was it the commandlet to the service, or was it s our service in general?
Right. And that's a good point, though. So suppose there was a failure. What's available to the operator or to you to support to try and troubleshoot that?
I mean, in code wise, I mean, people are writing their run books, so they have the options to do write outputs, on key commandlets. I always recommend that they use the was it the common one of the common actions on a command, was it stop on stop error, or
Right, right,
yeah,
right.
yep.
to actually stop and cause a failure. Because there, if you know this command is required for your run book to carry out what it needs to do, and if it fails, you pretty much know everything else going on for that is going to fail. Why even continue? And because what will happen is the run book will complete. Now we won't. Well, from our end, we'll say, well, the run book complete. I don't.
But there were
What
no
happened?
errors. Yeah.
There were no errors. So you need to go in and start figuring out actually where it failed. So write outputs your friend.
And where does that output go? When they call write output in Azure Automation, what happens to that output?
So when you go to a job up in the portal, right? You can go in, you can click on any particular job, and you can see all kinds of information that we stream out of that. So when a customer or a user puts in write output to like log where they're at, to basically do logging into the code, there's actually an output. There's like errors, output, all logs. There's all these different tiles you can pick from,
Right.
and you can click any one of those, and you can do like output, and you can see all the output statements from your code. And so you can say, okay, we were chucking along, here, 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 here. Oh, wait a minute. And then it started over again, back to the start. And the run book started over again. I don't understand what happened. But you'll know that, oh, I got to this point, and that's where it restarted. And you can go, okay, well, what was the next thing after that? Because obviously that's what failed. Well, now why did it fail? Well, then you need to like look at the commandlet to figure out what can you do to expose what its exception was or what its failure was.
So this sounds like, oh, sorry, go ahead, Matt.
No, go ahead. No.
I was gonna say, so this sounds like, classic code writing 101 in the sense of, as you're stepping through your code, write out what you're doing, when it succeeded, when it failed. If you get an error, don't eat it, right? Like all that kind of stuff. Just like if you're troubleshooting a script on premises, right? If I just have this block of PowerShell that just runs, it's really hard to troubleshoot. If I put in the right, output commands and I do some write.hosts and that kind of stuff, troubleshooting that and breaking it down is much, much simpler. It sounds like that's the same is true for Azure Automation. I just see it in the portal rather than seeing it kind of in my local PowerShell window.
Right. Yep. And like I say, most exceptions to PowerShell aren't fatal to the
Right.
PowerShell process, right? So it just keeps on trucking on to the next line. Because the idea is, well, you should check it and handle it because maybe you can recover from it, and you wouldn't want it to just completely be fatal.
Right.
You'd want to recover. So, yeah, that's exactly. It's
And does the environment where you're running the script or this run book, does that is that given some storage? Like suppose you want to read a file or something as part of your script, right? And upload it somewhere, or maybe you want to write something, some output from the script to a file. Is that how's that handled? Do you have to use blob storage or so or
Yeah.
table or something, or is there's no such thing as a like a temporary storage assigned to you, is there?
I'm trying to think. I know people write code to call into the Azure reporting stuff to see their consumption and their usage rates, and you know that generates those big, I think, XLS or
The
CSV
but
files.
But you just gotta put it somewhere at the end, right? You gotta put
yeah,
it
at the
in
end,
cloud storage or something to get it.
Yeah, and I don't, and I want to say that people are writing that right to blob storage,
Blob storage,
but
yeah.
yeah, I mean you have, you know,
So that's one thing that
parameters.
developers can't make an assumption that, oh, you know, because normally if I were to write a PowerShell script on premises, I'd just, you know, write it to a file, right? Using the, no, I think most of the scripts have an output parameter, right? Where you can specify a file name or something, and that just won't work over here.
You know what? To be honest, I haven't tried it to see
I
what would
bet it
happen.
works, but I bet it your file's just gone at the
It's
end.
just
It's
eaten up, yeah.
going to disappear at some point. Yeah,
Yeah,
I mean
it's either all
it might run for that
temporary
instance.
environment set up just for writing the script,
Yeah.
and they're gone, right?
Yep.
So
More than
that's some
likely.
of the. I think that's a kind of a caveat. That's a, as you said, you know, I think developers have to be a little bit cognizant of the fact that it's not running in the traditional way. Yeah? These are some special things to do because otherwise they're going to call you, and then they'll say, oh, you know, I was writing this file out, and I don't see it no more.
It was there when I was running my code, and then
That's
it was
right.
just gone. Yeah, that's funny. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, I could see somebody making that mistake without thinking about it. But once you realize kind of what I mean, this thing is really transitory, right? It sounds like Matt, like we spin it up. There's some, you know, memory constraints or whatever, and it does its work, and then it shuts down, right? Again, to
It's
the
gone.
serverless thing. So yeah, so it's stateless serverless computing, just like some of the other stuff we were talking about last week, Sujeet. Right, stateless is your key.
No, but suppose something bizarre happens, like, you know, they say, you know, the script didn't execute, or, you know, I don't see any output, nothing happened. How would you troubleshoot something like that? Like, I mean, do you guys have, is there like the equivalent of Azure Diagnostics, you know, where it writes diagnostic information to, you know, like all the other Azure services have, or what are the other diagnostic systems or facilities available to Azure Automation?
I mean, like I said, the output thing we talked about earlier is the key one for customers. There is the logging. There is actually some what is it in the account? People don't use it a lot, so I don't go into it very often.
Yeah, that's like the diagnostic blade or the logging blade, right? You're talking about.
Right. Yep. And
Yeah.
you can see certain events and activities related to, like, you know, you doing stuff with the service. I don't know how much it logs with respect to you processing your jobs, your runbooks, if you will.
It's more like an audit trail of what happened in your account, right?
You deleting things, creating things, that type of thing. But obviously, like all Azure, there's logging on the other side for the service, right? That the support side people can leverage.
Okay, this is good stuff, Matt. Thank you for all the perspectives. I mean, you know, you've I'll be honest with you. Coming in here, I knew very little about Azure Automation. I feel like I know a whole lot more now. I feel like I go and write some scripts in right now and put them up there. Just, you know, yeah. I mean, I see the utility of it, right? I think it's obviously something that. I think people take it for granted that you know, I've heard this word thrown around even at my customer. They all were like, "Oh, everything's automation, automation, automation." I heard the word like 20 times a day, but I never quite understood what it was, and I do now. So I thank you for that.
Yeah, and there's also, I think there's some other piece of Azure that uses automation as its one of its key phrases, and it's not necessarily the same as this service. Because we see that come up a lot, and I don't know
Which other services that
what that service is, but yeah, there's something else that uses the same terminology, unfortunately. So there's a lot there that goes on once in a while, but
Oh
if
well
it's
that
PowerShell scripting.
well I was gonna say, isn't that the one you and I were talking about this the other day, where in the portal there's a button that says,
Oh, the
I
Cloud
think it
Shell.
says automation script or something like that, but it's not. All it does is generate a script of your resources. It has nothing to do with
Right.
Azure Automation.
Yep. I think
Yeah.
that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just that button, Sajid, that generates the
Right,
template
right, right. This
for you.
creates the ARM template for you.
Yeah. That's not
Got
Matt's team. If that doesn't work, don't call
However,
Matt.
you can take the output of that and make it into an Azure Automation
Probably,
footage, right?
yeah.
You can put your ARM template and put some PowerShell behind it, and voila,
Yeah.
orchestrate the creation of your resources. That's great.
No, yeah, no, this was cool. Thanks, Matt. Like I said, I have to confess, I am one of those 70% that use at first time I ever used Azure automation is to scale up and scale down a VM that I use for some stuff here at the house, and it works great. It was like as soon as I realized it was just PowerShell, mostly, right? It was
Right.
like, oh, this now I feel really comfortable. I really didn't know how I was going to do it, but it felt like the right way to do it. And but once I saw it's a great tool. So yeah, I definitely recommend people check it out.
Yeah, I don't want to drag out your thing, but one other thing we do offer is DSC, the desired state configuration.
Right.
But we're just a pull service, so basically you can onboard machines to have, the configurations you write and upload to our service pulled to each of those machines. They're onboarded and they're they get that state and they run the script. But again, we're only a small layer of that being a pull server. 90% of things that sour are going to be within
Within it.
DSC
Yeah.
service on that machine, the
Right.
agent, or with the script itself.
Well, you're basically the repository for it in that
Base, yep,
context.
exactly.
Oh, so you can point to the DSC can point to a runbook. Is that what you're saying?
When I run to a, it wouldn't be a run book. It's just a,
It's
I think
just a
behind the
script.
covers it might be a run book, but basically it's just a housing of all your configurations and which machines they map to.
I
And
see.
basically they just get pushed down there. They get pulled so often to make sure that they're still meeting that state.
That state, yeah.
Yep.
That's good. Good tip. Thank you.
Yeah, PowerShell. I wish I knew more about PowerShell DC. It seems like it's tremendously powerful, but it is something I'm not good with. At some point, we should. It sounds like if you combine it with this, right, you can really just manage your machines. Done. Like you don't have to do anything at that point.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, Matt, thanks again for coming on
Absolutely.
and sharing all your insights. And if you have any links that you want to, our listeners to know, please send them to me. I'll put them along with the show notes. Right.
Roger, I can do that. If I think of some over the next, between now and tomorrow, I will certainly send them your way.
Thank you.
Awesome.
All right,
Thanks,
then.
Matt.
Have a good
Appreciate it.
night.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.